Rocket, presented by Defense Diaries. I'm your host, Bob Mata, and this is my beautiful and brilliant co-host, Allison Mata. What's up, girl?
Hey, babe.
Hey. All right. So, look, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. I forgot when I messaged that the orders were pending. Like I knew ahead of time.
You seem to have forgotten a lot of things, apparently, today.
I'm old, man. I had actually known ahead of time that this was going to oral argument, but I was sworn to secrecy. So, and I had accidentally, Kara had posted a different order for, and I'm talking about Kara Weinke, who is the author of, her and Mark Lehman are the authors of the second original action. And she had let us know that they were ordering oral arguments to take place, which is cool.
Well, first of all, why don't we mention what we think it means that, you know, they asked for oral argument.
All right. So, yeah, I'm going to pull it up per usual. And much to your dread, I'm going to read it.
Well, so, it's short, so it's okay.
It's short. All right. So we got a couple orders came down today. First, we got this one, which is the order relating to the Indiana Supreme Court notice of hearing. As you can see, it was filed on December 11th, 2023 at 5:29 p.m., so after hours. I was actually on a phone call, of course, Delphi-related phone call, when this came down. So I was, you know, I was late to the game in terms of getting it posted. But it's short and sweet. And it says, notice the hearing, the Supreme Court will hear oral argument on the relator's second application for writ of mandamus and prohibition in state ex rel Allen. And then that's going to be January 18th, 2024 at 11 a.m. The relator seeks a writ from this court reinstating his former counsel, setting trial within 70 days, and removing the trial judge and appointing a special judge. The argument will be conducted in the courtroom of the Indiana Supreme Court. Address given to us. The argument will be 60 minutes. Now, this is interesting. I believe that they typically get 40 collectively. So they've given them an extra 20 minutes. So they anticipate could be some heated arguments, some back and forth. A lot of questions from the justices, I imagine. So the argument will be 60 minutes, equally divided between the relator and the parties opposing the writ. Any entity granted amicus curiae status may argue without further motion, but only with the consent of the party with whom the amicus is substantially aligned. So meaning like the public defender, you know, the basically the commission had filed an amicus on their behalf. And also, I wouldn't really call the attorney general's, his was entitled a response. It wasn't an amicus. So I don't know.
Yeah, he's responding.
Yeah, I don't know that that applies to him. Well, let's continue reading and see if they address that. But only with the consent of the party with whom the amicus is substantially aligned. The relator shall open the argument, meaning that Kara or, but, and this is news. I do know that Kara is not going to be arguing this one orally. Her co-author in the petition is going to be arguing, Mark Lehman. She assures me he's amazing. They have both argued many, many times in front of the Supreme Court of Indiana or Indiana Supreme Court. So it's not his first rodeo. And the reason that Kara is not doing it is because she actually has something that was up previous to this, that was filed long before this, that is up the following week. So she's got to prepare mentally. You know, any time that you're going to be arguing in front of the Supreme Court, as you can imagine, it's pretty intense. You've got to really prepare yourself mentally, make sure that you know your facts. And we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about how we expect this thing will go. And it says, the relator shall open the argument and may conclude the argument by reserving part of the relator's time for rebuttal before beginning the argument. Okay, notwithstanding the original act, Rule 4C, appearance by the respondent or counsel is required. Attorneys of record shall file acknowledgement of the hearing no later than 5 days after service of this order and should arrive 20 minutes before the scheduled start of the argument to complete an appearance form.
And that right, this is really small for me and I don't have it up in front of me. So I think what you said is that the, and I'm just going to say amicus because I'm used to it. So there you go.
Is that bigger?
Yeah.
You see it better? So which part were you?
I was just wondering if they took time to argue if it was going to come from the time that the relator.
That part says any entity granted amicus status may argue without further motion, but only with the consent of the party with whom the amicus is substantively aligned. So it doesn't answer your question. What Allison is asking is, so theoretically, both sides are going to get 30 minutes, okay? And what Mark can do at the beginning is he can say, justices, I am going to basically reserve 10 minutes of my argument for rebuttal, meaning after the opposing side goes, depending on how long they take, and then he will get to rebut whatever they say. So I imagine that he will do that. It's very commonplace, but Gull's attorney will have the opportunity to do the same thing. So in theory, it'll go Lehman, 20 minutes, and then Gull's attorney, 20 minutes.
If you note, it says the parties opposing the writ. So I think that's acknowledging that you've got both the attorney general and...
Yeah, that's a good point, which means that eats into Gull's time, Gull's attorney's time. Like he's not getting additional time,
Right.
I wouldn't, or are they going to do it 20-20-20? I mean, I guess that's possible.
Yeah, because it does say equally divided between.
It could
be equally divided between the realtor and the parties opposing the writ. Maybe you can ask Kara while we're sitting here talking about all this.
Yeah, and I asked Kara, at this point, she's not wanting to come on any lives until after the argument. She doesn't want to draw any attention to anything. So I didn't even ask her because I had asked her to be on News Nation with me the other night because they were asking for somebody. And I was like, well, let's have Kara on. And then I had messaged her and she's like, yeah, I'm going to lay low until after the arguments, which I obviously respect. So that's interesting. Maybe I'll text her while we're going live. So
yeah, you text her and I'll let the people know some other stuff. So the Supreme Court does not have to always grant oral argument, as doesn't the appellate court. So you've got a couple things here. First, the fact that they granted oral argument shows that they are taking this seriously and either not inclined to dismiss it on its face for one of those technical things, or there's some dispute amongst the justices as to what they should do or if they should do that. And also, as Bob mentioned, the fact that they gave additional time, it could be because they expect a lot of questions from the justices, they think the issues warrant additional time, or because there is the attorney general and Gull's lawyer. But either way, I think all in all, it shows that the Supreme Court has every intention on taking this very seriously. And I think that Bob's planning on going up there, which will also be interesting. And 100%. I don't know. I don't think we know that there's going to be, I can't imagine cameras in the courtroom, but typically, and I don't know about in Indiana, but a lot of the Supreme Courts will have their oral arguments, the audio available for the public at some point.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. I have it confirmed there will be a video stream through the court's website, much like when we did Adnan Syed and we put that thing out there.
So we'll check the court order and maybe we'll do that again. Depending.
Yeah, well, I'll be there, but you should do it. You should do it for the folks that want some commentary from you. Well, that would be awesome. But yeah, no, they're going to have video and audio. So they're going to stream it.
That might be desperately boring.
I doubt it. You're amazing. You're like, people love you more than they love me. They're always saying, Bob, shut up. Let Allison talk more. Bob, quit interrupting Allison. All right. So, now what I wanted to ask you specifically, like trying to kind of read through the tea leaves a bit, as you were stating, based on the fact that we've gotten to this point where there's going to be oral argument, do we think that Gull's procedural argument has fallen flat? Because, and let me just give you my premise. That would have been a very easy way for the court to say, you know what, we don't believe that you've met the procedural hurdle, the condition precedent, meaning that you should have filed an interlocutory appeal. Or do you think that that is still open for debate, that they want to hear argument as to, you know, the relator's petition, whether or not that is really, you know, whether that was a remedy that was available to them? Like, what do you think?
So we touched on all this while I was saying words, but just to re-say it, I think it, to me, it indicates that they do not intend to rest on that. However, I gave the possibility that the justices were not in agreement. So it is possible that the justices are not in agreement. So they do want to hear oral argument on that issue. But my, you know, visceral reaction would be, with the extra time coupled with the fact that they have set it for oral argument, which they don't even have to do, seems to me that they are going to delve into the substantive issues presented.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. That's where the far more fascinating issue is, with the merits of the case. You know, but man, it's hard to explain to people how fast 20 minutes or a half an hour will go when you're standing in front of like all these justices and they're grilling you. This is like typically within five words of you speaking, they're interrupting you and asking you questions. So it's like, if you think you're going into an argument like this with a prepared statement and you're just going to be able to sit there and get through it all, you're dreaming. So when people are watching this, we're going to warn you ahead of time, prepare for both sides to be interrupted by the justices. Because remember, as I'm sure Allison said, I mean, the reason they're asking for oral argument is either there's a split or they have a bunch of questions that they need answers to that they didn't feel were sufficiently answered in either the petition or the response. So it's going to be a real back and forth, and they're fascinating. If you guys have never watched anything in front of the appellate court or listened or anything in front of the Supreme Court, it's like you have the trappings of the court, which are breathtaking. And it's like, it's the judiciary at its highest form. You know, it really is an art in there. Everybody feels it. The lawyers feel it. The judges obviously sitting up on high in their robes, looking down at counsel sternly, you know, and everybody knows it's as serious as you can get in the business. So, all right. Now
I was just going to say that we actually, you always actually want them to ask those questions and butt in, because all that matters is what those justices are thinking. Nothing else matters. So when they ask you questions, you know, they're invested and they've got specific issues that they want, you know, fleshed out. So it's always good.
For sure. For sure. All right. So the next thing we've got that I'm going to publish here is, so a second thing happened today. So we got that. So we know that thing is going. And something I wanted to ask you, Allie, do you think, like, how quickly do you think that they, and I know it's speculating, but how quickly do you think that they will turn around on this thing in terms of from the time that they hear? Pretty quickly.
I mean, I would expect that these are the most serious and expedited type of things that should be addressed, you know, by a Supreme Court.
Yeah. And you know, to the extent that it's, you know, it made it in front of the court this quickly, where sometimes it can take forever. You know, it should tell you that they understand the magnitude of the case. They understand that the eyes of the world are watching. And, you know, I hope that they act expeditiously. I really do. All right. So, I mean,
before you read this, I was trying to read it, and I actually did, because I think there might be some windows into, you know, some of the same issues applied as far as, you know, initial burdens and things that weren't done. So you kind of get a window into the court's thinking, you know, through this order.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So this is relating. So remember, if you're not following the case, there were two original actions, two petitions for writs of mandamus and prohibition that were filed. The first one was relating really to Judge Gull's her management of her docket in this case in particular. And so the writ of prohibition was against both Gull and the clerk. And if you'll recall, I think probably, I don't know how many days after, right before she filed her response, the day before, or maybe the day of, like earlier in the day, Judge Gull drafted up an order directing the clerk saying, hey, you know, Madam Clerk, I need you to fix all the things that you screwed up on the docket. You know, this is your job. You should have been doing this and doing that. And I need you to put all these things back on the docket. And, you know, I think she owned a couple of them. Like, I think that she owned pulling, that she directed the clerk to remove Rosie's two filings, like his petition to DQ her. So again, this is relating to the first original action, which again was seeking to get the docket fixed up. And remember, the docket is the story of the case. Like, appellate courts need a clear record as to what happened, not just to trial, but everything preceding trial, because I've told you guys many, many times in terms of when the real war is fought in any trial, and it's in all these pretrial motions that take place, because that is when the judge is deciding what evidence is going to be admissible at trial and what's not. All right, so published order denying the writ of mandamus and prohibition. All right. So Richard Allen has petitioned this court under the rules of procedure for original action for a writ of mandamus prohibition. He requests that, one, we order the trial court to reinstate several court records as publicly accessible documents on the chronological case summary, hereinafter the CCS, and the electronic case file. And two, to prohibit the trial court from ordering the removal of any court records filed in this case from the CCS and the electronic case file. And three, to prohibit the trial court from excluding from public access any court records without complying with the requirements of our rules on access to court records, the ACR rules. Allen argues our intervention is necessary because the trial court has failed to perform the clear, absolute duty imposed by our rules to ensure public access to court records. We first explain why Allen has failed to show that our intervention is warranted, and we provide guidance about the requirements in our ACR rules. Original actions are viewed with disfavor. All right. So this is going to both. All right. So this is like right from the get.
So can I like interrupt real quick? It's very typical for the Supreme Court, whenever they're writing an order, to put like very basic law about what they're doing. And, you know, and in this case, it's a very short order. So the most important thing to them that they felt to chime in about is what Bob was just saying and about to read, because that's like bedrock for original actions.
Right. All right. So original actions are viewed with disfavor and may not be used as substitutes for appeals. Oof. Oof. All right. So like, you can see how that relates to the second original action, right? Like, that's the thing that I was worried about. Like, people were talking me off the ledge. Are they going to say you had to file the interlocutory appeal? So they're putting it right out there. Okay, so Indiana original action 1C. Okay. Now, because the writ is an extraordinary remedy, we will not issue a writ unless the party seeking relief, quote, can show a clear and obvious emergency where the failure of this court to act will result in substantial injustice. And then they cite the case of State XRL, City of New Haven v. Allen Superior Court. Okay, 1998 case. Allen has not made the requisite showing here. The requests that prompted this petition have largely been resolved, and that is by Gull's court order. Okay, and thus mooted by the trial court's order entered on November 14th, 2023. This order directed the trial court to take specific actions. Okay, one, placing on the CCS the 118 individual documents that were previously made remotely accessible by court order in June of 2023. Two, the unsealing of two filings from June and July of 2023 and placing them on the CCS. And three, placing pleadings that Allen's former counsel filed in October of 2023 on the CCS and making them accessible to the public, along with reinstating these excluded documents to the CCS. The November 14th order reflects the court's intention to comply with the ACR rules going forward. If there are any remaining concerns about the access to court records here, interested parties should first seek relief in the trial court and then pursue an appeal if necessary.
So again, circling back to that concept, seek relief to the trial court first and then file an appeal. So basically what the Supreme Court is saying here is this issue comes up again, don't bring it here. It doesn't belong here. It shouldn't have been here.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So we now take this opportunity to clarify the requirements in our ACR rules, which recognize the quote, strong societal reasons for allowing public access to court records, end quote. And that is Indiana Access to Court Records Rule 1 commentary. The ACR rules presume the public will have open access to court records with limited exceptions. Those exceptions are found in Rule 5, which identify two types of records that are excluded from public access. First, Rule 5A sets out several categories of entire cases excluded from public access, including when either statute or court rule requires the records to be treated as confidential. For these records, exclusion from the public access is automatic and no other notice is required. Second, Rule 5B sets out 13 types of individual case records excluded from public access. For records falling under this rule, documents must be filed as confidential and bolded, include an ACR form identifying the specific basis for exclusion. Aside from these two exceptions, Rule 6 permits a trial court to exclude otherwise public court records from public access only in extraordinary circumstances and by following the rules process. That process requires any person affected by the release of the court record to make a written request to the prohibit public access, which must give notice to the parties and allow 20 days to respond. And before a trial court excludes the requested record, it must hold a public hearing and issue a written order explaining why it is granting the request. And that's, it cites ACR rules 6C through D. We expect all Indiana courts to comply with these rules. The justices of this court have reviewed the briefs and other filed materials and conferred with each other. Because Allen bore the burden to persuade this court to issue a writ and he has not done so, the petition is denied. Denied. This disposition is final. No petitions for rehearing or motions to reconsider shall be filed in this original action. Done in Indianapolis, 12/11/23. Loretta H. Rush, Chief Justice of Indiana. All right, so there's that.
So I think what you're seeing there, both sides of the hammer. One saying, don't bring this issue to us before as an original action. And, you know, this is the way we want you, Judge Gull, and everyone in Indiana to be handling, you know, the record.
Right.
Which is, it's public.
Yeah. And, you know, before we got on tonight, Allison's like, we're not going to be patting ourselves on the back that we said that everything was going to be mooted. And I'm like, well, you know, yeah, a little bit. So we told y'all it was all going to be mooted. I didn't think that this thing was going to get, I didn't think that they were going to issue a writ on this. And when, as soon as Gold did that, I think we did a live and we both said, we think it's pretty much mooting it out. So I think ultimately what I want to talk about a little bit, is, do you see any kind of indications from this rather short opinion that can give us any kind of peek into what their mindset might be with the much bigger, much more important original action that is going to be argued on January 18th?
I would say they used language in that first part where the like where it was setting out that original actions are disfavored. They used language in the second part of that to be like, unless there is an emergency situation that's going to result in substantial injustice. And I think the second action could fit squarely within those parameters. Obviously, also, like you said, they're still talking about, have you, you know, shown that this shouldn't be, you know, this isn't a substitute for an appeal. So have you shown that you shouldn't have taken that route? And at this point, I think even if they would say maybe something should have gone that route, that they might also find at this point there is, like, in essence, an emergency that's going to result in a substantial injustice, and time is of the essence. So, you know, they're going to use their discretion to hear something they might not otherwise hear. They're going to, you know, they've got plenty of discretion to, you know, to work around things. So I'm still hopeful that the reason that they've scheduled the hearing and didn't just say, because look, if they're also concerned with time, they could have very quickly said, file an appeal. Like, no, not here. You know, so why are they going to drag this process out just to, at the end of it, say, go file an appeal?
Okay. I agree completely. I actually think that it shows quite a bit. I think that this positions themselves in the sense that they're giving a very clear, like, bright line rule is to one thing that is not even close to reaching the level of an emergency or something that needs to be handled in an expeditious manner, because there's the threat of substantial injustice. And, you know, I mean, they state that unequivocally, like, this thing, this is what you go to appeal for. Don't bring this to our doorstep. How dare you do that? Now, because we didn't get a very similar order issued today, which I easily could have done, the fact that we got this order and the first thing that they address is the fact that you skipped a step. And when you skip a step, you got to show us something extraordinary in order for us to decide that it's okay for you to have skipped that step. So I think, and it's just my opinion, that because this was entered and that they put this out there with that language in there, I think that there may be some argument in the Supreme Court on the 18th, but I think that they have decided that the circumstances that are in front of them with respect to counsel being removed, whether or not Judge Gull should stay on this case, these things, it has to go to the merits. I think that at that point, they're absolutely going to get to the merits. And I think that that's what they're going to rule on. And I think because of that, that we will end up getting the full argument. I because that's really what I want to see. You know, I mean, that's the, like, for us out there that are, you know, kind of legal scholars and interested in the procedural side of this and the constitutionality of it, like, that's what I'm dying for. I am dying for those arguments, because that's where, you know, I'm hoping that we can get Brett and Allison alive and we could duke it out with our words, you know, and I want you and Brett to go at each other with respect to the case law, because you have a very different reading in terms of the case law with respect to appointed counsel and the Sixth Amendment rights, you know, therewith. So it's like,
I've already pointed out that the Attorney General's motion quoted the exact thing that I've been talking about, as far as there being a split in the circuit and it not being a dead issue like, you know, others have said that it was. And can you remind us, babe, what's the name of the lawyer who's going to be doing the arguing? It's not Kara, but
Mark Lehman. He's the co-author of this particular original action, this petition. So in the first one, it was Maggie Smith and Kara. And on one, it was Mark Lehman and Kara both drafted.
So it sounds like we're of the same mindset, as far as it seems like the judges intend to consider the issues now emergencies, because they could have chosen. There are so many different little one sentence liners that the court could have put after the sentence about we disfavor it. It's not the same quote that was used in any of the briefs. They didn't use this emergency, you know, issue that risks substantial injustice, because I don't recall reading that language before. So, I mean, that choice of language is, you know, it could be significant.
All right, y'all. So we love y'all. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you gained some insight into what's going on. Obviously, everything that we're saying is just opinion here with respect to what we think is going on, but I would call it educated guesses.
And it's based on facts.
It's based on facts. So for certain. To all y'all out there, thank you guys so, so much for being here, because without you, I'd just be an old man.
Talking about a lot of cases.
Talk to you later.